Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon. Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the fourth season, the last episode of the first Doctor, and I guess the first serial of the second Doctor, technically, but it's called The Tenth Planet. There's four episodes that aired from October 8th, 1966 to October 29th, 1966.
Joe Fax!
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Who's joining us today?
Just some dude. I feel like he was just here.
That's it. That's the introduction that you get. It's just some guy.
It's just some guy. So I find I don't need names. Where we're going, we don't need names.
Like, I feel like people won't forget because he was literally just here.
Just go listen to that podcast.
I was just listening to that podcast because I wanted to remember what I sounded like and whether I was entertaining or not. And I think I did a decent job.
I give it two thumbs up.
It's always a good podcast when you're on.
And now you're back again for your third episode. It's Ben Padden, you guys.
Woo! Check me out with my various appendages. What?
This is audio only, so
I've got limbs coming out the wazoo. I'm like a bag of legs.
Yes, paint a picture for the audience of just exactly what you look like.
I'm like someone went around Skyrim hacking legs off of people, and then they put the legs in a barrel, and then they put a head on top of the barrel of legs. And then they put that barrel behind a counter of a store and are now trying to play shop with the barrel of legs.
Ben Padden, Barrel of Legs.
Ben Padden, Barrel. That's actually going to be the name of my autobiography.
I imagine so many people are going to think it's like a typo and supposed to have been Barrel of Laughs, but no, it's really, no. It's all
Barrel
legs.
Of Legs.
There are very few laughs.
There's almost no laughs whatsoever. I'm not known for my ability to make people, you know, vocalize their mirth.
Yeah, generally it's just screams and of terror
at the
amount
legs.
Of legs.
Yeah. Just too many.
Too many legs. It's too many. It's like the run cycle in Sonic the Hedgehog, where it's just like this sphere of like leg meat and shoes.
Is there always a blur over your legs as well? Like a speed blur?
It's like my legs are on Cops, but they didn't sign the release for their face to be shown on camera. Is Cops still on the air? Is that a relevant reference?
I can tell you that it is because when I was at home, that's what my sister's favorite TV show. We watched a lot of Cops.
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say, I can tell you that it is because I've been on an episode as recently as last year. And I thought, what did she do?
Just live in Georgia now. That's where Cops comes from.
There's at least two episodes that were set in Chattanooga, which we live near.
And they're both really cringeworthy, if I remember. Like, particularly cringeworthy.
Chattanooga sounds like a teens-only chat room website that is not doing as well financially as they like to make people think they are.
That actually describes Chattanooga pretty well.
That's an apt description.
I just imagine if, you know, you go to like, chattanooga.com, their office building, it's all, like, marble floors and glass walls and pinball machines and kind of like, I'm blanking on the guy's name in Parks and Rec who is played by that one guy. Like when he and... I'm blanking on every name.
Aziz Ansari and John Ralphio started the... I don't remember what name of the thing was.
That, I just picture that for Chattanooga.com, the hot online destination for teens to converse. But they're actually losing money at a spectacular rate.
Again, I feel like you're just describing Chattanooga, the city.
Chattanooga thinks it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like, we've got all sorts of art stuff. Hey, look, we made our own font.
Jesus. Is the font called Chattanooga?
Yes.
Should we get into episode one, maybe?
No.
Just a suggestion? Just
okay, I'm going to tell you three things about the 10th planet that you may not have known previously.
Okay, it's time for...
Ben Facts!
Did you get the guitar riff in time?
No, sorry.
There's no guitar riff? Christ. Amateurs. That was clearly the cat. Okay, all right, so three things you may not have known about the Tenth Planet. Firstly, William Hartnell is one of two doctors to have been asked to leave the role. William Hartnell was asked to leave due to poor health. Later in the 80s, Colin Baker, who played the Sixth Doctor, would also be asked to leave, although in that case he was actively fired from the role because the BBC had decided that the poor ratings of the show at the time were his fault. Rather unfairly, I feel. They asked Colin Baker to come back and do a regeneration story, and he said he'd only come back if he got to do one full final season, and the BBC did not call him back. But that's that regeneration, obviously, we can talk about in 17 or 18 years when you guys finally get around to doing Time in the Rani. The second fun fact about the 10th Planet, three of the four episodes are in the BBC archives. Episode 4 is missing, but was reconstructed on the VHS release using set photos and audio, which had been recorded by a fan at the point of original broadcast, and the DVD release has actually a very well done animated reconstruction.
Yes, that's what we watch, and that was really good animation.
It has a kind of pseudo anime kind of feel to it that I really, really like. It's probably one of my favourite of the animated reconstructions that the BBC did for their DVDs. And the third fun fact, actually no, so this is still part of the second fact, William Hartnell does not appear at all in episode 3, so the last surviving episode of the William Hartnell era does not include William Hartnell in it.
I was a little bit nervous. I was like, do you think they're gonna
dodo him out?
Just like, he's sick and he's not coming back, he regenerated, now he's this guy.
But no, yeah, I mean, that's how they could have done. And there was talk during one of the previous episodes that's how they might have gotten rid of him. Like, they were going to turn the Doctor invisible, and when he came back, he would look completely different. I forget which serial that was.
I want to say it was Celestial Toymaker.
Yeah, the Celestial Toymaker. Yes,
yes, that will be it. They were talking about writing him out in the Celestial Toymaker, and then they obviously did not do that.
Which, could you imagine if they had?
Oh, that would not work very well. The third fact is the clip of the Doctor regenerating from the First Doctor into the Second, which, by the way, in my opinion, is the most technically proficient and visually interesting to watch regeneration of the classic series, with a possible exception of the McCoy to McGann regeneration. The only reason that footage exists is because it was used in a clip. That clip was used in an episode of the children's magazine program Blue Peter, and the Blue Peter episode, when the BBC kind of junked a lot of the stuff in their archives, although the Doctor Who episode was junked, that Blue Peter episode was not. So that clip of the Doctor regenerating survives.
That's awesome, because it would suck if it didn't exist.
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit of, like, existing footage that's due to Blue Peter.
Now, didn't you say about the
the regeneration was due, like, the way that it was done was...
they had, like, a piece of broken equipment that would overexpose, and they're like, no, we can work with this. Yeah. It'll look cool.
It did such a wonderful job. We didn't see the regeneration from the Second Doctor to the Third. The regeneration from the Third to the Fourth was, a slow fade. The regeneration from the Fourth to the Fifth involved a hell of a lot of talcum powder and another guy in a robe for some reason. The regeneration from the Fifth to the Sixth kind of looks like a prototype of what they ended up doing for the new series, but doesn't quite work. The regeneration from the Sixth to the Seventh, I told you I'd get back to this one later, involves Sylvester McCoy dressed in Colin Baker's outfit and a blonde curly wig, seen from the back. The TARDIS shunts, he falls over, lands face up, his face glows, and then his wig fades away. That's literally how that regeneration happens. And then the regeneration from the Seventh to the Eighth involves a lot of gurning on the part of Sylvester McCoy because he has a face for it. I remember as a kid thinking that transformation was so perfect. And you watch it now and it doesn't quite work as well. The way that they blended McCoy's face with McGann's. You know what? Let's talk about the episode we're watching that we're actually talking about. Let's do that.
Sure.
Let's do
it. But I just did want to say, like, I feel like it's amazing that great regeneration is due to something that was broken.
And they're just like, yeah, well, we can make this look awesome. And they do. It's very effective.
If you don't have, and this is for the listeners at home, /in bed/in their car/on the toilet, if you don't have the 10th Planet on DVD, and you should get it because it's a really solid story, not the best, but certainly not one of the worst stories of the William Hartnell era, you can see that regeneration. It's on the BBC Doctor Who YouTube channel, and it's fascinating to watch. So go watch it now. Pause the podcast, unless you're driving. If you're driving, you don't have to do anything, except maybe listen to a better podcast. But
if you're driving, you should pull over to the side of the road, pause the podcast, then pull it up on your phone.
Or just watch it on YouTube when you get to work. It's not like you're going to do anything when you get there anyway. What are you going to do? Like, no, I mean, it's not just me, right? I'm not the only person who would get into work at 8 a.m. and then literally do no work for the first hour and a half of the day, because it's like, this is the first hour and a half of my day. What do you want me to do? I'm not doing anything. By the way, I am looking for work, so if any prospective employers hear this, by all means, I'm available.
I think you should just do podcasts for a living.
I wish I could. Oh, God, I wish I could.
That's what Paul F. Tompkins does, right? Like, you could do that.
I mean, Paul F. Tompkins, the McElroys, somehow managed to eke a living out of doing podcasts. Maron does podcasts. Other people probably do podcasts.
But, I mean, you should just do everyone's podcast.
Just appear on every... Like, just call Greg Proops up and say, hey, do you need another mouth? Not on your podcast, just on your face. Just two mouths.
So...
There's a Star Wars joke in there somewhere. Let's talk about the 10th planet, episode one.
Let's talk about the inaccurately titled 10th planet, because it would actually only be the 9th, because Pluto's not a planet.
Planet's out there, right?
But in 1986, there's probably a ninth planet, possibly.
Because like Pluto was supposed to be the, like, we knew there was like a ninth planet, or there should be. And everyone's like, oh, it's Pluto. And then it's like, oh, it can't be Pluto. So there's probably one out there, maybe?
I think Pluto was counted as the ninth planet until we kind of actually stopped and went, hang on, this is a rock. This is a teeny tiny rock about the size of a basketball. It cannot actually... It's a dwarf planet, so I guess technically it is a planet. It's just not a full-size planet. This is the thing I don't like about the internet, other than everything about the internet, is that people are like, yo, I know all the planets, you know, Earth, Mars, Venus, Jupiter, Pluto, the rest, you know, Saturn, etc. And the minute someone says, actually, we've done some reclassifying, Pluto's not a planet, nobody cared about Pluto up until the moment when science said, it's not, it doesn't count. And then suddenly everyone's like, no, that's not fair. Pluto's always been a planet. I love Pluto, and people are wearing Pluto t-shirts and buying books about Pluto and telling stories. Jonathan Coulton wrote a song about it. And you know how little these Johnny-come-latelys to the Pluto fandom didn't give a crap before it was declassified or reclassified? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's still there. It's not a planet. Just because you know the name of it because you were taught it in school doesn't mean it's deserving of the high... Do you know what? That's like saying a really crappy actor deserves an Oscar because he's also an actor. It's like learning that someone who isn't great actually has never won an Oscar, and you're going, well, that's not fair. They deserve an Oscar. No! Their own only IMDb credit is man shitting on photocopier. He doesn't deserve an Oscar. What is wrong with you? Pluto is the astrological equivalent of man shitting on photocopier.
Was that the title of the movie or his role?
That was actually the original title of The 10th Planet. No, sorry, my apologies. It was the original title of The War Machines.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about The 10th Planet, episode 1.
I'm
giving it titles.
Oh, all right. Do your thing. Make your joke.
It's not funny. But...
Are you giving each episode fake individual titles?
Yes, I started doing that in the last podcast. So.
I did not notice this because I did not listen to it. But
that's because it's not out yet. So
now I feel slightly less guilty. Can I recommend a title for episode 1? It's Who Are These Guys? Because the first half of the episode is just a bunch of people and a horny Russian man. Or horny Italian, sorry, wherever he's from. He has an accent.
They all sound the same, don't they?
Those Europeans.
It's better than my title, so I'll go with that.
I think he was Italian.
Yeah, because he said Mamma Mia. He did say Mamma Mia, so he's Italian. That's how it works.
I think he said Bellissimo or something.
Bellissimo.
My title was 1986, A Space Oddity, so.
That's clever. Nice, I like it.
But no, we do spend an awful lot of time. We have astronauts in space.
People in a base in Antarctica. And the guy who really likes saying penguins, he said it at least twice this
episode. He was very excited he was where penguins were.
What I think it is I think that there was other scripted dialogue, but he could only remember the bit about the penguins. He ad-libbed a second line, so he got to say penguins again, because it was like his only, you know, the linchpin of his memorized dialogue for that scene. That may... be a lie.
That's the Ben fact I was waiting for.
I think there should be Ben facts and there should be Ben facts, which are faux facts.
I'm sorry, they're what?
They're faux facts.
Okay, but I heard Ben Fokes.
Ben Fokes. It's a portmanteau of faux and facts. Fokes.
I don't even know how you would spell that.
F-A-U-X-C-T-S. Yeah, and if I, the goal is to come up with slightly less than half a dozen of those an episode whenever I'm on as a guest, and then we can call them the Ben Fokes Five.
I think maybe we could keep working on a title for those.
Yeah, the title for that is about as bad as my titles for the episodes.
I'm sticking with it.
Okay, so I want to talk about, since we're talking about the astronauts, something happened that I'm actually excited about is that we have a person of color who's not a stereotype.
They're just an astronaut.
And he has lines and everything.
Yeah, it's
great.
Cool. He's, and that's, is that Williams on board the ship? It's called the Zeus 4. Because there's nothing hubristic of, he said, inventing a word, about naming your spacecraft that's going into space, as opposed to a spacecraft that's going to Michigan, after a god. It's like, I'm just going to throw a god at the sky and see if he sticks. That's basically NASA. But yeah, Zeus 4, you've got Schultz and Williams, who are named after Dwight Schultz of the A-Team and Robin Williams of Mork and Mindy. And that is another Ben Foke.
I thought it was based on Charles Schultz of Peanuts fame.
And Charles Williams of She-Nuts fame. No, that didn't land. Didn't work. She-Nuts was the porn parody of Peanuts. It ran for 3 strips and then they were sued into a fine paste by Charles Schultz.
So the TARDIS materializes outside of the bunker.
And you get Ben and Polly and some guy in a cloak that is, we're told, is the Doctor. But it's his body double because William Hartnell got, I think, fake snow in his eye and fell over. I may be imagining some of that. But I know that those shots, that's not William Hartnell was the Doctor. Where they're outside in the snow. That's why he had no dialogue in any of those sequences. It's not until they're in the base when you see his face.
Yeah, and he's, like, not even really, like, around, because, like, Ben and Polly are sort of wandering around, and, like, look at all this snow.
Yeah, they do all the one... That accent was atrocious, but in fairness, so is Ben's. They do all of the exposition, all of the... Like, I'm pretty confident they had some of the Doctor's dialogue in that scene, if you were to look at the shooting script.
Yeah, I know Ben got a lot of Hartnell's
lines. Do you know how I noticed that?
How?
He seemed more useful than normal. Ben's actually doing something besides just shouting and making that one face.
Can I have that on my tombstone?
Yes, have at it.
Great.
down below, though, we get the Italian guy with the pinups on his wall.
It's weird because they're in the sleeping quarters and there's a periscope there. It's like, yeah, we're just chilling out. This is where we sleep and occasionally look up at the surface of the snow. Why not? And then Periscope Man is basically, hey, there's a girl up there. And Italian Man is like, ah, my erection! And runs over to look. Hot damn, check out these games! And that's basically his entire motivation.
That is not an exaggeration.
I think that's the only thing he even does in this entire serial. Yeah.
I think there is a character in the upcoming Seth Rogen animated adult movie Sausage Party based on this Italian Man. I think that the name of the character is Italian Sausage.
I hate you for making me remember that that's a thing that exists.
It exists. Did you know the screenplay leaked?
Yes. I've heard that there's like a 3-page sex scene orgy.
You need to read it?
No.
So that you know in your heart of hearts how fetid that movie is going to be.
I can't get over the fucking vagina mouth. Titty having hot dog bud.
Can I just say, I'm sure when you started this podcast, you did not expect to say those words. Vagina mouth, titty having hot dog bun is not something that has popped up in classic Doctor Who. Torchwood, yes. Doctor Who, no.
I don't even know where we're at.
To be fair, that was my favorite episode of Torchwood. So.
The one with the vagina mouth hot dog bun.
Titty having.
Don't you? You cannot forget the titties, and that was also a note that Seth Rogen gave the animators. Do not forget the tits on this hot dog bun. Do not forget.
How come the hot dog doesn't have a dick?
It's a hot dog.
No, because he is a dick. The bun is the woman, and the hot dog itself is the man, and it's a metaphor.
Because men are penises and women are vaginas.
I gotcha.
That's the heart of the movie.
Women are bread and bread makes you fat. I don't know what point that's supposed to make. It's horrible.
Ugh.
It's a Seth Rogen movie. It's not exactly nuanced. It's not like people are going to be like, oh, this. Have you seen the new Darren Aronofsky movie? No, but I've seen Seth Rogen's animated Sausage Party. No, it's not happening. The hoi polloi and the rich and the elite are not going to be discussing Sausage Party unless they work for the studio. And the one thing they'll be discussing is, oh, that fucking movie lost us so much money. Oh my god.
No, that movie's gonna make that movie's gonna make bank.
No! I don't!
It will.
Please, no. No, please, please. No.
Shitty movies like that.
No,
make
please.
So much money.
Please, please, no. No, please. Please.
I need to believe this.
Please. Please, no.
On.
Joseph, please, no. Please, no. Please, no.
It's going to have sequels?
No, okay.
No, please.
I will give you that it will make money. For the love of God, they're never going to make another one again.
Please.
For this
no.
sake of humanity.
Anyway, inside Snowcap, the Doctor, Polly, and Ben are we skip the part where...
But we skipped the part that I liked, which is the door into the base is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's like that triangular...
It's got triangular like flaps that fold down, and it looks neat.
Triangular flaps, kind of like a vagina having...
Stop!
...embreasted hot dog bun.
You set yourself up for that one, love.
Yeah.
By talking about triangular flaps.
I guess.
Triangular flaps was also what Toblerone is actually called in Sweden.
I believe that.
And that is a Ben Fax.
That is number 3 of the episode. We're almost at the Ben Fax 5.
Almost met our quota.
We're still barely in the beginning of episode 1.
So.
Triangular flaps.
That is a cool buns. Entrance. But, like... Yeah, they go up to get Ben and Polly, and like Ben and Polly don't even like go, what's going on? They just go, all right, let's go down.
It's snowing, I think, and they're like, it's cold. Let's go inside.
Sure. What's the worst that could happen traveling with the Doctor to alternate planets?
We're not really doing anything anyway.
Oh, and then I don't remember the context for this scene, but it's my favorite so far. It'll have to be my favorite because this is the last first Doctor. Huh? But my favorite William Hartnell line where, someone's like, there's this general guy that's just yelling.
That's his name actually, is General Guy.
Yes, General Guy.
Cutler. Sorry, General Cutler.
Cutler, yeah.
No, it's not General Cutler, though.
It's not General Cutler?
It's a
different guy. Cutler's the Penguins fellow. This is just a different guy. And I think he's like saying, we need to get, Cutler.
Okay.
And he's like, get him! And he's just like, just yelling really loud. And then the Doctor says, could you speak louder? I'm deaf.
That was a good line.
I've never laughed harder at a William Hartnell line.
William, I mean, that is him being sassy and sarcastic in a way that Patrick Troughton would be with more frequency. Spoilers!
But I think Ben kind of wants to figure out if he can get back to his ship.
Because that's all he fucking thinks about.
Yes.
Ben doesn't want to be anywhere. He said in the third person.
Ben just wants to be at sea.
I don't think he even wants to be a sailor. I think he wants to be a pirate.
That's the thing. The last serial we watched was The Smugglers, where the Doctor literally goes on a pirate boat, and Ben at no point even touches the sea. He's so obsessed with being in the Navy and the sea, and he loves the sea. You have an entire episode with pirates. And he's landlocked the entire episode.
You know what? I think he's not actually a sailor. I think he's just, I think it's stolen valor. I think he's telling people he's a sailor, but when he's actually put in a sailing situation, he's like, bollocks. my leg is here.
Right next to my other one.
Oh, I left my sea legs in the TARDIS. Oh, no. Yeah, I think maybe he's faking it. I think, yeah, it's stolen valor. Google that term if you're not familiar with it. Stolen valor.
I'm going to say that they realize that he can't go back to the Navy because they are in the future.
1986. The far, far future.
Fun fact, that is the year I was born.
So you were here for all this.
This was December 1986, so I was probably about 8 months old while all this nonsense was going down.
So you remember when we tried to go to Mars? That's what they're trying to do, right?
They're Mars adjacent. It's weird, though, because, you know, with all the stuff with the Cybermen getting reported on the news, you think my parents would have told me about that, but they did not. Oh yeah, you were born the year the Cybermen attempted to invade the planet and steal all our energy.
Were you sheltered, do you think?
I think I probably was. I mean, they didn't even tell me about whatever else happened in the 80s. Any of the stuff that UNIT dealt with in the 80s or the 70s, whenever it was.
Also, there's the time that, like, the Daleks invaded the Earth. That happens. Does it happen now? What year is that?
I don't remember. Actually, I think that is still a little bit in the future.
Oh, we have time. We have time.
20-something or other. We're good. We're fine. That's not including the Dalek invasion of 2009, which we all remember and live through.
So, back to the 10th Planet in 1986. We do meet General Cutler. He immediately takes a disliking to the Doctor.
Because
not just his,
someone has to mistrust the Doctor for being there.
Not just his politics, either, or his personality. He's like, I don't like your hair, and I don't like your face.
He does say that.
It's very non-specific. Well, not so non-specific. Sorry, it's excessively specific. It's like, it's your hair that I don't like. If you had like a black mop top and you look like an aging beetle in his dad's clothes, we'd probably be friends. But the fact that you look like a Victorian school teacher, I think is really what is making me want to punch you in your fat nose.
I feel like what happened is the Doctor is just like, fine, I'll change it then. And then he stormed off and regenerated, and that's how the serial ends.
At the end of episode one, it's one of those rare one-episode serials. So Cutter's like, his whole thing is, oh, you guys are dumb, and you look stupid, and you've got a big ugly face that's as dumb as a butt. We're going to put you in the observation room, and we'll figure out what to do with you later. And it's when they're in there that the Doctor looks at the calendar and is like, oh, it's December 1986. Colin Baker's just been fired. And then Ben is like, he's like, because he was going to be like, hey, I can go back to my ship. No, you can't. It's 86. And he was like, oh.
Everyone you know is dead.
Everyone you know is probably dead. And then he realizes that space travel is a thing. And he's like, oh, that's all right then.
He's mildly excited about it. Not as excited as he was about the possibility of going back to sea.
He's mildly excited. And then that excitement is never again addressed in the entire serial.
But so back on like the...
Zeus 4.
They're having problems, and I guess they're, like, running out of fuel, and they're losing power.
The powers, yeah.
And the Doctor's like, I know why that is.
It's interesting, because General Cutter, he has his mother's last name, but he's actually his mother's maiden name, but his parents were actually the Hoops, and General Hoop was also very well known in the... in this particular, you know, spacefaring organization, the name of which eludes me right now. So when the Zeus 4 contacts the polar base to let them know that they're in the midst of a predicament, they say, Hoop, son, we have a problem. That was a long
wow.
walk for a dumb Oof. Joke, and I'm so proud of myself.
That
that's Ben Act number 4 or whatever.
That was more of a stretch than what happens next in this episode.
You've got one more left and you better make it good.
Soylent Green is a peephole. In that, Soylent Green are a company that make peepholes for sex clubs. That's not it. That's fine.
I mean, you said it. You can't take it back now.
Yeah, but I didn't classify it as a...
if regular clubs in the Doctor Who universe have... names of future serials, do sex clubs have the names of Torchwood episodes?
Yes, they do. The club in question was called Random Shoes. Sorry, Miracle Day. That would be a better name for a... a weird name would be Children of Earth. Let's not go there. Oh, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
And if you want to go relevant to the thing we're talking about, Cyberwoman.
Oh, yes. The Chris Chibnall's masterpiece.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, so that they Hoop, son, we have a problem.
The Doctor is like, I know what it is, and he like writes it down on a piece of paper and like slides.
He does this the fucking Karnak bit.
And like, no one listens to him, and eventually he's like, they figure out what it is on their own. He's like, wow, you look at what I wrote down on that paper.
And is this your card? But yeah, there's a new planet just hurtling its way.
He does.
That looks an awful lot like Earth.
And even point out, like, the same continental masses.
That's Africa. It looks the exact same as Earth. That's because it's a twin planet. I guess that's how that stuff works.
I can see where my house would be from here.
I love it. Good job. Good goof. Good yucks.
And, yeah, it's a twin planet that...
Did it drift away? Or did they,
just
take it away?
Scooter out, like... As previously established,
this solar system, we're going somewhere else.
As previously established in the Dalek invasion of Earth, You can pilot a planet somewhere.
That's true.
I thought it was like a parallel orbit. It was like literally on the other side of our orbit, so that's why we never saw it.
No, they said it like left, and now it's coming back.
Oh, yeah. Why am I... Well, I'm dumb.
And it's... we'll later learn that the name of this place is Mondas.
Mondas.
And the planet is screwing up with the ship, and that's why they're like...
It's getting trapped in the gravitational pull.
The Zeus 4 only has like 20% fuel left or something to that effect, he said, looking at the entry for the episode on the TARDIS data core.
Tony's looking at the TARDIS Wikia.
That's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
We're on the same page. I'm glad we're all on the same page here, guys.
I've lost my place in the TARDIS data core.
Somebody says Christmas Sledge at some point.
Oh yeah, Christmas Sledge. That's a great... Christmas Sledge is my favorite rock band. Because we say sledge in England instead of sled or sleigh.
Really?
Yeah.
Or
why would you do such a thing?
Mostly because we hate America. and we just want to make you guys angry at the way we... Like, we call shopping carts trolleys.
Oh, fuck you.
Well, in the South, we call them buggies, so...
Fuck you.
That's something Tony tells me every time I call it a buggy.
I do. It's like, this is a shopping cart?
That's a trolley.
That's it.
Now you're on the trolley.
So wait, that's not just you fucking around? They really call them Christmas sledge?
Sledge, yeah.
But a sledge is like...
A type of hammer.
Yeah.
What?
Like a sledgehammer. Bam.
Oh, I always said hammock. Like, I've never heard of a sledge hammock before. I have heard the song, I wanna be your sledge hammock. Yeah, that... Okay, that works.
Okay, so it's not a blooper. It's just you guys are weird. Okay.
This has been Ben singing songs that this podcast doesn't have the rights for.
We'll just bill you later.
So they try to land, but they don't have any control over it because they're being pulled into the other planet. That's what she said currently. And so they go to the doctor and they're like, what's up? And I think that's when the doctor's like, why don't you look at that paper I gave you?
Check out that saucy drawing I gave you 5 minutes earlier. And it's a picture of a sexy cyberwoman.
And a penguin for Cutler.
And then the doctor's like, oh, how did you know this? And the doctor says, well, millions of years ago, there was a twin planet. And he doesn't offer any information as to how he knows this or where he got this information from. He just knows it.
I think it was in the script.
Oh, that's probably where he got it from then. Okay, that's fine. But he doesn't get to go into any more detail because Cutler's like, brr, brr. And then he walks away. I mean, he actually says words. He says the words, this is ridiculous. But I like it better if you don't vocalize the words that a person who's blustering and ignorant says.
So the doctor says, by the way, there's people on that planet, and they're probably going to want to invade the Earth. Like, heads up.
Well, why wouldn't they? The Earth's so invadable. You know what? Maybe if the planet... maybe the planet wouldn't be invaded so much if it didn't dress like that.
Yeah, but Cutler doesn't trust the doctor and sends people to look at the TARDIS. And while they're examining the TARDIS, a spaceship lands... A little circular...
Woo. That's the sound it makes.
Yes. And it lands, and out come the Cybermen!
This is a very, important episode.
For multiple reasons, too.
Yeah. Which I think, by the way, that the Cybermen look amazing. I love them.
There is something pretty phenomenal about the way that the Cybermen look in the 10th planet. I'm trying to think of the best way to articulate this thought I'm having. It's like someone saw the Cybermen from the 80s, like a kid saw the Cybermen from the 80s and said, Mum, that's what I want to dress as for Halloween. And this is the costume that they put together.
It looks like someone got a very large sock, pulled it over their head, and cut out eye holes and a mouth.
Ooh, you don't see this till the next episode, but when they talk too, they just open their mouth and hold it open because they're robots. But they still open their mouths.
Yeah, the way that they talk is pretty spectacular. And here's one of the things, because, you know, when I think about the Cybermen, and I think about the Cybermen during this era of Doctor Who, I think about the Invasion, I think about Tomb of the Cybermen. You know, I still think about some of the more recent stories like, you know, Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel, and so on. And the Cybermen in this story are very articulate and intelligent, and they talk with very clear intention and purpose, and sometimes a little bit too much, a little expositionary, but there's clearly an intelligence there which is not present, I think, in a lot of not necessarily later classic era stories, but certainly modern Doctor Who treats them more as a kind of mindless, unthinking automatons.
They seem almost like Dalek light
Yeah, they even have names in this serial, which they never do again, I believe.
They never have names ever again. Daleks get names before the Cybermen ever do again.
Right, and they're like Carl, Jonas, and Fred.
John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
But they have like an awesome, I don't know, you should also do it, because I can't do it.
But they also carry awesome giant, like, lamp guns that they kill people with.
I mean, I think they are literally heat lamps. I mean, I'm not even gonna... I think it's literally like, we need a gun. Oh, we forgot to make... Props forgot to make a gun. Ah, bollocks. Okay. See if the lighting department have any actual lamps.
That they do that a lot, where it's like, it's a science fiction-y gun. It shoots a light. It's a light gun.
It's a hairdryer with a light pen inside of it.
And,
but that's the end of episode one.
1986, A Space Oddity. Or what did you call it? Hey, who are you guys?
Who are these people?
Hey, who are these? I think episode two, I think we should just go with the words poo-pooed by Cutler, because that's what the first paragraph of the entry on the wiki says. Actually, my brain started a couple of words earlier with Bud is poo-pooed by Cutler, which is a whole other thing.
My title for it was Wanna Cyber.
Hi, ASL.
Poo-pooed.
Poo-pooed by Cutler.
Hey.
Colon, A Space Oddity.
I think Wanna Cyber is just been poo-pooed by Tony.
Are we going with poo-pooed by Cutler? I think that's the official.
Yeah.
Poo-pooed by Cutler. Episode 2, poo-pooed by Cutler.
Cutler.
Coming up next on BBC One, Doctor Who in Poo-pooed by Cutler.
So the Doctor is like, there's definitely people on this planet. They're definitely like on their way here to invade us. It's happening. And Cutler... poo-poo's that. And then we cut to the Cybermen, who are on their way to invade some shit.
Would that be the poo-poo from earlier?
Yes.
They put on the robes, or the coats, of the people they've just killed. And even though they're bulky as fuck, people are still like, hey, John, what's it? Oh, shit, you're a Cyberman! They literally sneak into the base by wearing these coats over their gigantic... like
shiny metal
things.
Heads.
It's ridiculous. Like, hey, you look perfectly normal with your giant head and broad shoulders. Oh no, it wasn't a person. It was some other thing entirely. Why didn't we see it coming?
I feel like there's just a perception filter over all of the first Doctor era.
That's true.
People hide in plain corners. Sight. They're just like, I looked at you, but I didn't actually see you. That's just how this era goes.
And it doesn't stop throughout most of classic Doctor Who.
And then we get another thing that reminds me a lot of the War Machines, in that we get a bit of exposition through a news report.
Yeah, very modern. It's a very modern approach to the exposition. It still kind of has that slower pace, but the kind of way of pushing that story forward with a news reporter is pretty golly gosh darn special. It's very Russell T. Davies.
What was the thing you said? You said you had some comment about the news report.
Did I? Because I don't like news reports. So I can't imagine what it was beyond.
I think it was news dumb.
I think so.
It was a comment about it being kind of stupid. About, like, what he was saying, like, what? How does he have this information sort
of
thing?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. No, the specifics of what he was saying. He just said something very specific where it's like, that's an outrageous thing to just say. You don't have that information. Yeah. Where he's like, there's going to be another invasion at 12 o'clock. Like, it was something like that.
But not
where
quite
it was
that.
Too specific. Yeah, too much information.
I think the suggestion is that other Cybermen have infiltrated the Earth media. So I think there'll be another invasion at 12 o'clock. Now let's go over to Gary with the sports. Gary, yes, thank you, man. This is the sports report. Like, that's, and it's a Cyberman doing the sports is what I was aiming for.
Is Cyberman Gary related to Dalek Gary?
No, Gary's just kind of my go-to Doctor Who monster trying to infiltrate human society name. I just think it's just a delight. It's like that and Steven. It's just such a boring name.
The Cybermen totally get there and they're like, hey, we're invading your shit. That's the next thing
that
happens.
Is a direct quote from the episode, by the way. We're invading your shit.
They stretch out random words. Is it the same guy doing the voice for the Cybermen that did the voice for the Daleks? Because it sounds very similar.
I don't know. Let me look at the credits. Scrolling.
Rawhide.
Cyberman voices. Yes, Roy Skelton.
So same guy?
Yes. Roy Skelton or Race Kelting, which is how I've decided to mispronounce his name for comedic effect.
Any relation to Red Skelton, the comedian?
No. Oh, he did a bunch of voices. He was he was the voice of the Monoids, the Daleks. He was a computer voice. He was the Croton.
They do just sound like if someone was messing with like the speed pitch of a Dalek.
So
we are the Daleks.
I feel like that's kind of my go-to 10th Planet Cyberman.
So when, like, you've seen more of this, when do they become more less this?
Less loquacious.
Loquacious? Isn't that a fancy word for sexy?
It is now.
It's a $4 word if I ever heard one. I don't know why that's where my brain went. I'm so sorry, I derailed myself. I think there's at least one other appearance of the Cybermen with this aesthetic, with the, you know, tube sock on the head, mining helmet, comically oversized kind of aesthetic. But the next Cyberman story that I've actually seen, on account of the fact that my approach to Doctor Who is don't watch missing episodes because you're not getting the whole story. And if they get recovered, it's like finding new old Doctor Who, which I think we discussed a little bit in the last episode I was on. The next episode is the moon base, which according to my DVD library, I've actually seen, and they have a more metallic kind of face in the moon base, not tube socky. This is the only tube sock appearance. The only appearance of the tube socks, not counting a couple of audios that they appear in.
Do they keep the voice? How long do they keep the voice?
Actually, the Cybermen voices do change significantly in the next appearance. In this one, they're more kind of sing-song, but in the next one, they're more kind of a flat electronic monotone, and they stay like that really until like the Tom Baker era, really. They don't get any of their character back until... There's one Tom Baker story with the Cybermen, and then they become far more recurring during the Peter Davison era onwards.
So the Cybermen are invading things, and they're like, hey, can we save the people in space before you, like...
And the answer is no.
They're like, go for it. It's impossible. You can't save them. You're wasting your time.
And the Cybermen basically also, at the same time, sort of give out their entire, like, here's everything we're about! That sounded really, like, bad Swedish.
Here's everything we're about. That sounded like bad Canadian. Well, now Tony, do one.
Oh, I don't.
That sounded fine.
Yeah, what was that supposed to be? But like, they talk about, you know, we have no feelings. We are humans with robot bodies, and we have no emotions.
Yeah, they stop short of giving the Doctor a PowerPoint presentation explaining what a Cyberman is, but they go into a tremendous amount of detail considering they are invading the planet.
It's very thoughtful of them.
But basically, they took their planet and just went away, traveled, I guess, and they're like, we're back now because we haven't done our laundry in a long time. We don't have any energy left on our planet.
We ran out of planet juice. Hey there, neighbor. Could I chub you for a cup of all of your planet's energy?
What exactly are they? They are sucking the energy out of Earth, but like,
what does that mean?
What?
It's never really elaborated upon. And here's the dumb thing as well, is like, at several points, several characters say, well, they'll just burn themselves out doing this energy sucking thing. Which means, oh, no one really has to do anything with the Cybermen. Just wait for them to burn up and die.
Their plan is ultimately a terrible plan, which will lead to their death.
It's like, no, at this point, everyone can walk away from the narrative because the Cybermen are going to kill themselves. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, Indiana Jones doesn't need to be there because as soon as the Nazis open the Ark of the Covenant, they get their faces melted off anyway.
I mean, and I guess the Doctor realizes this and just sleeps through episode 3.
He sleeps through episode 3, yeah. He's like, you don't need me here, come on. It's funny because it's true. The Doctor won't wake up. It's not that he can't, it's that he won't. He's unconscious. He's asleep. He's an old man. Let him rest. He doesn't need this. This one sorts itself out. Let him chill. Do you know how much sleep he gets on the TARDIS with that noise in the background all the time? None.
But even though nothing needs to be done, Ben still tries to do something.
I find it ironic that in his bid to be useful, he ends up being more useless. Because there's no... He doesn't need to do anything. So everything he's doing is just wasting his own physical bodily resources.
He gets one of the Cybermen's lamps.
No, he gets a gun. But after the general tries to sound an alarm, Cutler does, and then the Cyberman squeezes his head.
Oh yeah,
he does. Makes him fall down, and then
bursts like a melon.
And then Ben's like, "All right, I'm gonna grab this gun," and he like the Cyberman's like, "Give me that gun," and then just bends it. Like, look how strong I am. I bent this prop gun.
I don't think he says those words exactly.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
No, he says it like a robot.
Look how strong I am. I bent this prop gun. What? What did he say just now?
I said I bent this prop gun. Hello. For the rest of this story, the Cybermen will be voiced by Vinnie Jones.
I don't know why. I'm sorry.
Oh, and no, in the fine. Meantime, the planet, the spaceship, like, they lose it, right? They're trying to save it, but it gets... explodes.
They lose it, they put it down, and they can't remember where they put it.
Okay, so they take... But after they bend the gun, they take Ben to this room. They put him in a room. The projection room. And Ben, he hates projection. Like, he's like, oh, a projection room.
He does. He says it like he's pissed.
Oh, projection.
Oh, again?
This is not the sea! All I wanted is to be at sea.
And being a former projectionist, I was offended.
You will be in that projection room and you will like it!
You need to set up some kind of project to establish the importance of projectionists. I don't know what you would call it, but... Team Light Show.
Port Center.
No. That's taken. I've got it. The Washathon of Rassilon.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, even better. Sausage Party.
Monsters Anonymous.
Monsters University.
Monsters Incorporated.
Monster High. I went too far.
Mondus. Okay.
And now we're back.
The Moon Base.
Cyberwoman.
Ben realizes, though, that he can use this projection room.
Sorry, you said Ben, and I thought she's really adamant that I stop goofing off. Like, Ben!
God damn it, Ben! Get your shit together!
Yeah. Yes, miss. Sorry, miss. Sausage party.
I don't deserve this.
This is the end.
What happened? It sounded like a stack of marbles fell over. I don't know how you would stack marbles, but kudos to you for trying.
We accomplished it, and then Tony just knocked it over.
It sounded like a barrel of puppies.
Being poured everywhere.
Which is a problem, because puppies are traditionally stored in boxes.
I thought you said crates.
What? A crate is a box. Get your shit together.
God damn it, Joseph.
I'm sorry.
What is a crate if not a fancy box?
It's a box that the war machines really fucking hate.
Yes.
They're prejudiced against crates. They do not think crates are crates.
They have a severe case.
You can see the face I'm giving you.
They have a severe case of crate hate.
Severe case of crate hate. Case!
Case.
It could also be a box.
You know what? We really need to keep these goofs contained. Wait a minute. Contained. Container. Container is a box. Welcome to the Boxcast, where we list things you can put other things into. This week, we're on Tupperware.
We think inside the box.
But we think outside the bun. Taco Bell, live mass.
We think outside of the vagina having, titty having. But.
So, when you guys get divorced, and you're in court, and say, what are the grounds for divorce? Are you just going to play this episode? And the judge will be like, yeah, that's fair. In fact, annulled. Done. Please don't get divorced.
We have to keep this podcast going, and if we get divorced...
It'll become kind of awkward.
Yeah. We've said if one of us dies, you get to take over. Whichever one of us.
You regenerate into me. That would be awkward.
You also have to take over the you know, marital duties as well. For whoever you replace.
Whoever's still alive.
Yeah.
Not for whoever's dead. That would be weird.
If I die first, do you both have to replace me?
Yes.
We have to do Port Center.
You know, actually, I would watch you guys doing Port Center. I would watch that show.
I don't know anything about video games.
That's why I would watch it. I like my coffee ground and my man's cybered. So let's continue talking about the 10th planet.
Oh, is that what we're talking about?
That's what we're doing here, yeah.
So yeah, the...
So this isn't just a Sausage Party fan cast.
Zeus 4 explodes and everybody dies in the ship.
That's
so
sad.
So our person of color did not last very long. But still, it's a step forward.
Yeah, but we're about to take, you know, we're not too far away from Tomb of the Cybermen, where we take like 8 steps back. Have you seen Tomb?
No.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but there's a very racist black character. And I'm not saying like he hates white people or something like that. I'm saying that as a character, as a black character, he's not a great representation. It's very like 60s racist, like this is what we think black people are. But not in a, like, jive-talking kind of way, but in a strong, silent-type, dumb kind of way. It's a very specific type of racism. And so uncomfortable to watch. It's a shame because I love Tomb of the Cybermen, but every time I see his character on screen, I think, oh, you idiots.
Still, I don't know if anything's going to top the Celestial Toymaker, where they just straight up drop the N-word. So, okay, so it's, Zeus 4 explodes. Everybody's dead. Mondas is wanting to get energy from the Earth and the humans. And, okay.
Oh, Ben! Ben's in the projection room. That's where we're at.
And he has the greatest plan in all of Doctor Who history. It's akin to that time that the Doctor put a coat down on the ground to pull the Dalek to think it was the ground.
That plan is amazing, and fuck you, okay?
It is amazing because of how dumb it is.
Because it worked.
But this is on par with that, which is that...
It also works.
Ben sets up the projector to blind a machine.
Like, I'm going to point the projector at the door, it'll blind him, and then I'll just run away. And it half works.
He turns it on at first, though, and it's like playing some Western or something. He's like, I saw this 20 years ago.
Yeah, oh, this is an old one. Ha 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 ha.
Because it's the future.
And he looks at the camera and goes, get it? And winks.
And, of course, the Cyberman comes in and is blinded by a projection.
He's blinded by the light, revved up like a douche, etc. The rest of that song. No one knows what the lyrics are after revved up like a douche, because it's not revved up like a douche, but everyone thinks it is because that's what it sounds like when you hear it on the radio.
And so the Cyberman's like, oh, that makes me really fucking mad. And he takes out his anger on a table.
Can I just say, your word for word quoting from the script is starting to get a little bit tedious. Like, you should start paraphrasing more. Because if we're just quoting from the script, we may as well just enact it rather than describe the episode. So I just...
We should do that for an episode.
The next episode where you have to do a reconstruction, instead of doing that, do a fun script read. Maybe even do it as a backers only like Patreon bonus. Just get a bunch of people on Skype.
That sounds like a blast.
Amazing.
I'm already in, by the way. I will. I'll do that.
You have to play Ben.
Oh shit!
I have talked to multiple people that are watching like all of the classic Who stuff. Not a one of them like Ben.
But no, I'm like waiting for someone to be like, "Why is everyone being so mean to Ben?"
Did you see?
Because I don't have it. Like, because he's the worst. I don't have, like, a good, like, well, you're right, there are some good things about Ben. There aren't.
So here's the thing, someone has to like Ben because Big Finish went to the trouble of recasting the character so they could incorporate him into the audios.
Why?
I don't know.
People think he's cute, I think.
I think they should just replace Ben with Ben Patton.
Yeah, he's voiced, oh, I mean, I'd be on board for that, but then I would probably be disqualified from playing the Doctor, as I will clearly do. In, 5 to 10 years' time.
Why would you be disqualified?
Because you can't have an actor play a companion and then come and play the Doctor. It's just not on.
Well, I mean, but people have played the Doctor that have played other characters.
Yeah, but not a companion.
But Donna Noble was kind of the Doctor.
Ben in the audios is now voiced by a gentleman by the name of Elliot Chapman.
And who plays Ben, actually? Like, normally?
Who's the actor?
Michael Craze. As in, you be crazy if you like this companion. He's the craze that's sweeping the nation.
Or completely failing to.
But he marries Polly, according to the TARDIS Data Core article.
Oh, she deserves so much better. That's mean. All right. I'm, like, really worried about, like, that one Ben fan who's pissed right now.
We had Web Planet fans, so...
Good. People think... I mean, my friend Dino loves the Web Planet because of its goofy nature, but there are people who like it because they genuinely think it's brilliant. And these people, I think, deserve to be loaded into a rocket and blasted into the sun because it's nonsense gibberish.
Yet still not the worst episode we've watched, but...
I will say, I really like... I like any time, like, a Cyberman or a Dalek is, like, struggling, because they make the best sounds. They're just like, oh no.
But yeah, Ben kills the Cyberman with the gun, and then is, like, immediately guilt-stricken. I had no other choice, he says.
He's so used, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna save the day. Oh no, I saved the day!
I'm very upset about it.
Meanwhile, the general... wakes up from his head squeezing in the most awesome shot. He wakes up and we pull back through the legs of a Cyberman. Like,
he's like right under a cyber crotch.
Like the Cyberman's got his like leg like Captain Morgan pose. And it's like he just zoomed like right past his crotch. It was fantastic. But he wakes up and Ben sneaks in and gives the general the light gun. General Cutler kills all of the Cybermen. So he feels no guilt or remorse.
No guilt or remorse, because...
Why would you?
There's a certain irony, I think, in killing emotionless automatons and feeling nothing. Could that be? Could it be? Is it? No. Yes. What? Poetic irony? Could it be some kind of narrative thread woven through the story about the value of human emotion and the importance of being true to ourselves? Or am I just grasping at straws?
I don't know what you're doing. We can't see you.
Oh, I'm naked, shirtless, and jerking off with a bunch of, you know, other people. Seth Rogen's here.
You started the sex party?
Started the sex party.
I just imagine there are so many cum-soaked hot dog buns.
I'm leaving.
I didn't have enough for more than six, so some people are going to have to share. Don't you hate it when you go to the store and the hot dog buns are packed in six, but you've invited eight people over to jerk off into them?
God damn it.
I can't break.
I don't deserve this.
I don't know how the fuck I'm going to edit this episode.
I think this will become two episodes. One will be about the 10th planet and the other one will be about sausage party. If you can pull an entire Sausage Party podcast out of this recording.
So we now learn that General Cutler has a son that's also an astronaut. Hoopson's son?
Sorry.
He is an astronaut.
Hoopson Jr.
Which is a great Atari game.
Shut up.
He is also experiencing the power loss caused by the planet Mondas.
Does he say the words, "I have the power"?
He says, "I don't got no power."
That's racist.
Well, this dude's white.
That's why it's racist.
Okay.
Probably. I don't know. I'm not paying attention anymore.
This is the general's son.
I'm on Fandango buying tickets for Sausage Party.
I want to go see it now, just to do a podcast on it. We should do a live reading of the script.
The Watchathon of Sausage Porn.
Where are we?
Are we on episode 3 now?
Basically. What happened at the end?
Coulter makes plans to secure Snowcap from further Cyberman invasions. Blah, blah, blah.
So he's just like, we're going to have a war.
Yeah.
And they look at the radar and there's all those dots and they go, oh, spaceships. Shit. There's
so many spaceships. Oh, they're all
we're being attacked
here
by the New Year's Eve ball.
That's what it looks like.
And that's the end of episode 2.
Now we're in episode 3.
Poo-poo by Cutler. That sounds like a great perfume. We're now into episode 3. The Z-Bomb. Or as the French call it, ZZ-Bomb.
ZZ Top.
How much work do you put into these?
As little as possible.
In light of the fact that William Hartnell is missing in this episode and the Doctor's asleep, can we call this one Don't Wake Dad?
Yes.
Yes. All of yours are just not making it up against Ben's.
While the Doctor's away.
The Cybermats will play.
So the Doctor collapses, right at the top of the episode, I guess.
Oh, or his stand-in does.
His stand-in does. Yeah, and he is not in this episode at all.
By the way, the actor playing his stand-in was Billiam Fartnell.
Is that number 5?
That's number 5. I think that was it. I got the biggest laugh from Joe. I'm happy. I'm content with my choices. My Ben Fartnell.
Done, too. He's not coming back.
William Fartnell.
What? You're laughing way too hard at the dumbest joke I've made in my entire podcasting career. In fact, why don't we go through and give all of the Doctors silly names? William Fartnell, Hattrick Trout, end of name. John Bon Pertwee. That's T-Bomb. T-Bomb. Done. T-Bomb. Peter David Stone. C-Bomb. Sylvia Plath.
The real McCoy.
Yeah. Pull My Finger. John Bon Hertwee. I did a John Bon Jovi joke twice, but I'm going to keep going. Christopher Davidson. David and Goliath. Two people played the Doctor.
David Tennant is what I've heard him called.
Well, I think that's a nickname Billy Piper gave him.
Because of his ginormous heart.
Right.
On.
For Matt Smith, he shall be called Hat Smith, because he always liked wearing a fez. Boom, dunzo. And then people for the ethical treatment of animals, baseball cap, that one supermarket that sells really cheap groceries. You know, Peter Capaldi.
Fuck you.
Do you have anything for, like, the alternate Ninth Doctor, the one who later played the Great Intelligence?
Richard E. Grant, whose comedy name is Withnail.
Or, I've preferred him as Darwin Mayflower from the critically underrated film Hudson Hawk.
And then Peter Cushing is, I'm going to phone this one in, Grand Moff Tarkin. Fuck it. Fuck it. And then the 13th Doctor is obviously going to be Emma Watson.
Dick Cushions. That's...
Dick Cushions. Isn't that the name of the hot dog bun from... All right. Episode 3.
There's a bomb, you guys.
So
a Z-bomb.
The Doctor is not in this episode, so most of his lines either get sent to the main technician dude or to Ben, who's like, the Doctor told me this at some time. I'm repeating him.
So doesn't Cutler... He calls up... I think, like, the International Space Center, and he's like, hey!
Geneva, yeah.
So I want to bomb the crap out of Mondas, and they're like, no, don't use the Z-bomb. And he's like, but I want to, and they're like, no. And he's like, well, what, we need to defend ourselves. And they say, well, obviously you can defend yourselves. And then Cutler's like, oh, so you give me permission to do whatever is necessary to protect the base? And they go, yeah, sure. There's no way you could misinterpret that or openly interpret it as a way of using the Z-bomb. Go for it. And then Cutler's like, and hangs up, and then he starts to arm the bomb. That's literally how that breaks down. He's like a 5-year-old, you know? It's like 5-year-old. Like, I want something to eat. I want some candy. You can't take any candy from the kitchen. It's like, well, I want to eat something. Like, well, they're going to the kitchen and get something to eat. You're saying I can get something to eat from the kitchen? Yes, go. Okay, I'm going to the kitchen where the candy is. Bum, bum, bum. Like, that's how that entire conversational breakdown went.
It was, as it was literally happening, I was like, he's not gonna... Okay, he's doing that.
That's his plan. All right.
Wow. Well, technically you said...
It's not my fault. It's absolutely your fault. We said don't use the Z-bomb. You didn't say don't, not, can't use it. No, we literally told you not to use it. But then you said I could do whatever I wanted. No, you go to your room.
This is the point where Ben is like, the Doctor told me this. The
Doctor
planet,
said that the Cyberman's plan is stupid.
And it's gonna cause the thing to explode.
We just have to wait for them to blow themselves up.
So just chill out. Like, the Doctor's literally asleep right now. We don't need to do anything. And they're like, no, we're gonna Z-bomb the crap out of the planet.
And they're worried about it going supernova? Mondas?
Yeah, because planets can do that.
Yeah, they can explode and then turn into a star? Is that what they were worried about?
I guess.
I feel like that was said. Because I remember going, that's a thing. Sure, that's a thing.
Doesn't Barclay, the Doctor is, like, seen missing for the entire episode. But Barclay and Polly go and find Ben, because why wouldn't they? Because, oh no, Cutler confined Ben to the same quarters where the Doctor is resting, which you think would be a great way for us to never have to look at Ben again. But then Polly and, I'm blanking on his name now, Barclay, go to Ben and say, well, we need to disarm the Z-bomb. And they send Ben to go and basically go through a ventilation shaft or whatever.
Like, it's, like, right next to the top bunk, and it's huge.
As it should be. You know, you want your ventilation shaft so big that people can surreptitiously sneak around your entire base of operations without having to use security, you know, keys or interact with personnel or any of that nonsense.
I was going to say, the Doctor's sleeping, and Ben's doing this, and Polly, meanwhile, is making coffee. That's her whole plot this episode, is to make coffee.
She was going to use instant, but then she realized she had a moment of clarity and an epiphany, and she thought, you know what? I'm not going to use the instant. I'm going to grind my own beans. And that's her arc for this cereal.
Although yep. She gets one other thing to do, which is somehow convince a really terrible guard
that she's Ben.
There's enough people in the room, I guess?
By just hiding underneath the...
Is it? No, is it? It's like the bit from Home Alone 2 Lost in New York where they've got the inflatable clown in the shower. I mean, that's basically what happens, right?
The cool jerk. But no, yeah, Ben, like, you know, John McClane's his way over to the silo.
Ben is the one, I think, who has to end up, like, disarming it, right?
Well, they're gonna pretend to follow the orders.
Launch it while simultaneously trying to disarm it.
And because Ben isn't part of the base, he can slip in. Giggity.
More Cybermen arrive, and they've got, like, a row of light guns set up, and they kill the Cybermen, and then they go and grab their guns, so they're, like, stockpiling Cybermen weapons. But yeah, so, but then Ben's, like, fucking around inside the silo thing, going to disarm it, the rocket, the Z-bomb, and he is caught by General Cutler, who rushes in and throws him over the railing.
And Joe says, finally. Finally.
I was so happy. Then, like, shit's going bad. Ben's passed out, and Polly's, like, checking on him, trying to make sure he's okay. And then he wakes up and makes the dumbest fucking faces I've ever seen.
My favorite thing about Ben regaining consciousness is he cannot remember if he has sabotaged the bomb or not. Like, that's what I was laughing at, like, 4 minutes ago, because it's like, oh, I can't, oh, shit, did I do the thing? I can't remember if I did the thing. And, that's the cliffhanger, is like, did I do that? It's, the cliffhanger is like the Doctor Who bomb equivalent of driving to work and, did I lock the gate before I left? Did I do that? I have a horrible feeling I left the oven on last night and I didn't turn it off. And now I'm driving to work. I need to take care of this. I need to take care of it. Cliffhanger.
But I gotta say, this is the only time there has been a countdown on this show and it's been effective. Like, there's good music. It's appropriately tense.
It doesn't start at 50.
It starts at like 10, and they put up the numbers on the screen. And then it's like, when it gets to 2, it cuts to a shot of the Z-bomb, like the rockets like flaring out. And that's like the only time I've been like, that's an effective use of a countdown on Doctor Who. And that's the end of episode 3.
Don't wake Dad.
Don't wake Dad. And we're now into episode 4, the final countdown.
I think episode 4, in light of its reconstructed status, needs to have like a suitably ridiculous anime name. Cybernetic Crisis! Exclamation mark. The Coming of Mondas! Colon. Sailor Moon. I don't watch enough anime.
The movie.
The video game.
The sausage party.
Is there going to be a sausage party tie-in video game? And if so, how many copies am I allowed to buy before I end up on some kind of sex register?
I think you only get to buy the one.
And then, yeah,
and that's it. You're on the list.
Yeah. If Seth Rogen isn't on a register now because of this screenplay, I'm going to be very upset.
Before we dive into like what actually happened in the episode, I do want to talk about the animation. Which
peer
is
pressure. Oh, wait, no. Animation.
The animation of Sausage Party.
Great. Just amazing. Very fluid.
My entire life, I've wanted a hot dog with a vagina, mouth, and titties. Like, what more can a person want in life?
It's really some creative character design, that's for certain.
And it's voiced by Kristen Wiig, even better. All right, moving on. But the animation of this episode, yeah, it's really good. We watched the animated reconstruction for The Reign of Terror, which was kind of terrible. Like,
it was hard to watch.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the animation was bad, but it was just like super choppy.
I think it was like fairly obviously rushed, where it was like the style was good, but like, you know, there were shortcuts so that they wouldn't have to animate things.
Well, I mean, a lot of these things were done for not very much money and were done very, very quickly.
But they would do weird things, like the doctor is walking from one end of the room to the other and somebody's watching him walk, but they will like weirdly cut between the two of him walking across and the other person like watching him, but like not in a natural way. It's like cut, 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 cut.
Right, it's
cut,
covering
cut,
up
cut,
places
cut,
where they don't want to animate things, basically.
It was just really bad and like headache inducing. But this one, the animation for this serial is like, it not only just like is a reconstruction for the episode, it's like, it's not just like we need to put stuff here so people can watch something. It actually, they I feel like they strive to make it look good as well. As you know, the framing's really good. The animation in general is nice and fluid. The camera placement's really good as well. This was a drastic improvement over the animation for the Reign of Terror. Like, the entire opening sequence with Cutler and the whole gun thing that happens was, like, tense and really good. Just really well animated.
Yeah, I mean, I it's one of my favorite reconstructions. I have a soft spot for the animated episodes of The Invasion, even though the animation isn't necessarily great, because Cosgrove Hall animated The Invasion. And they're the guys who did, you know, Danger Mouse, Count Duckula, and so on back in the day. So it was really cool. But fun fact, a Ben fact, not a fake fact, a faux fact, a real fact, is that almost every company who has done an animated reconstruction of Doctor Who missing episode for the DVDs went out of business shortly afterwards, because the BBC doesn't pay very much and they put a lot of work and effort and time and money and almost certainly lost money on every project they worked on. So almost every one of the animations is done by a different company. And almost every one of them went out of business afterwards.
That is really sad.
It's tragic.
Like, the more I hear about the BBC, like how they did things, like especially in Classic Who, I'm like, that's a sketchy organization. They do some shady things.
They're better now. They're more organized now. But, I mean, BBC Worldwide only has so much money to throw at the classic DVD releases. And I think the fact they're able to do... The reason why The Invasion, the missing episodes of The Invasion were animated was for a project that was being done for the Doctor Who website at the time before the new series got commissioned. And those episodes only existed because they were working on this thing for the website. All of the animated reconstructions that have been done since were specifically for the DVDs. And like I said, the BBC didn't have a lot of money to throw at it, but the companies threw a lot of time and effort and energy and manpower at them. And some of them look great, like The Tenth Planet, and some of them look like Toilet City, like Reign of Terror. But almost every company worked on them no longer exists.
What about the animation studios that did like The Tenth Doctor stuff?
It's interesting because I know that a lot of the people who worked on The Invasion also worked on The Infinite Quest, which is the season 3 story that they animated with David Tennant and I always mispronounce her name, Freema Agyeman? As the Tenth Doctor and Martha, respectively, and
Anthony Stewart Head's in it as well.
Yeah, Tony Head does a voice in that one, and a couple of other people. The company that did Dreamland should be firebombed from the sky because the animation in that is just wretched. I remember seeing clips from that and thinking, "This is unfinished, right? Like this is just test animation. You've released this. This is broadcast on the BBC. Okay, all right, that's fine."
The animation for The Tenth Planet was far better than Dreamland. What I thought was weird is, like, I feel like Dreamland was a better story than The Infinite Quest, but looked way shittier.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Should we talk about episode 4?
Let's do it.
Phantom Menace? No, really, this one should be called A New Hope.
Oh, which is appropriate, because...
More like A New Grope, right? Sausage Party 4.
A new grope.
A nude grope.
I think this episode has the most dick jokes.
But by virtue of the fact that we spent a lot of time talking about Sausage Party. So the countdown reaches zero, and the engines fail. The rocket doesn't take off, because I guess Ben actually did sabotage it, even though he was like, did I? I can't... And Cutler's pretty annoyed about that. He says he's going to kill everyone. He threatens to kill Ben, Barkley, and the Doctor.
If they don't refuel it.
He thinks his son is dead. Is his son dead? I can't remember.
No.
He thinks his son is dead. He ignores the Cybermen. He ignores the fact that there's another bunch of Cybermen about to invade the base. And also ignores the Doctor saying, we literally do not have to do anything. Mondas will burn up in our atmosphere, and whatever it hits us will be no bigger than a Chihuahua's head. He's like, nah, grief! In some of the finest grief acting I've ever seen on the BBC.
I have to say, I do think all of this, the family drama with like Cutler and his son and all that, was actually really effective. I liked a lot of it. The drama was
nice
good.
For a change.
Yeah. To have like, a character.
Care about these people.
Character-based reasons for all this bullshit.
It worked. It was effective. It wasn't super effective, but it was effective enough. Yeah, Cutler is about to, like, kill a bunch of people. He's like, yeah, I'm just gonna kill the Doctor. I'm just gonna kill him. I'm straight up murder his ass. And then the Cybermen show up like, no, and kill him instead. Cutler gets killed. The Doctor is not dead. I misread the next line of the TARDIS wiki as, the Doctor tries to meditate with the Cybermen, but he does not.
I'm glad, because I just did the same thing.
It's mediate. He tries to mediate with the Cybermen, offering them a home on Earth to replace their broken up planet. And the Cybermen are like, maybe you should get that missile out of our face. Maybe that's something you should do, is not have a Z-bomb pointed at our home.
By the way, just to make sure you're going to do that, we're going to take Polly.
And they squeeze her head.
Yeah, take the useful companion. Good job. That's the way to make things happen on this show.
We don't want that other guy.
Yeah, either someone looked at Ben and were like, oh, we'll take her.
Do you think? I think they're just frightened of Ben because of his projection skills.
That man knows how to use a light.
I tell you what, Ben has seen the first 20 minutes and the last 30 minutes of The Dark Knight Rises so many times. A little projectionist humor for you there.
Oh, I get it.
So the Cybermen take Polly and they say, "All right, we will go dismantle that missile. We don't want to fire at anybody anyway.
We don't even want to use it. God, we're just insurance. I was never going to use it." Which is what the Ninth Doctor literally says in Rose when the Autons find him carrying anti-plastic. Boom, look at me. Flash forward. It's a call forward.
And then,
they take Polly and they take her to the ship, and there's like this big metal chair, And they're going to make her the cyber dude.
Cyber dude. Ben and, like, various scientists or whatever are in the silo with the Z-bomb.
Shouldn't it be called the Xylo?
Absolutely.
Yes.
I love doing podcasts with you guys because you laugh at my stupid, dumb jokes every time.
We'll laugh at pretty much anything. So you're not special.
You just laughed at yourself.
Exactly. See?
It's really a hair trigger.
But yeah, so they're all hanging out in the Xylo. And Ben shows smarts that he's never shown before.
Again, he's got the doctor's lines. And
well, the doctor's in this episode, so he has no reason to suddenly pull shit out of his ass that makes sense.
Again, William Hartnell was experiencing health issues, so they may have been like, you know, we'll take some of the doctor's lines and give them to Ben.
That's true. But he's like, hey, you notice how the Cybermen don't come in here? I wonder why that is. Why don't they come in here? What are they afraid of?
And then he says, oh, well, let's never speak about it again. And then they have a conversation about pie. Because Ben really likes pie. Oh, he loves pie. He cannot get enough pie.
Likes pie almost as much as he loves the sea.
And hates projection.
You know his favorite flavor of pie is? Sea. Just go to the store, get a pie crust, fill it with sea, bake it in an oven at 350 degrees for 2.5 hours.
Sounds salty.
Well, all the sea would evaporate, and he doesn't understand why that keeps happening. One of these days, I'll bite into that pie, and the sea will be in there.
One of these days. But they realize...
One of these days, bang, zoom, straight to the sea.
Straight to the sea. They realize that they're not coming in because they're afraid of the radiation. Because
why wouldn't you be?
Because, right, robots are super susceptible to radiation poisoning.
As we all learned, watching Blue Peter.
They figure that out, and, like, then Ben does something stupid.
What? No!
And he cuts communication with everybody. He, like, pulls the wires out. Like, now we can't talk to people. And I don't honestly remember why. He had
a
reason.
He can't spy on them.
But I can't talk to anybody else, so.
Right, yes.
Well, don't do anything worth spying on.
Well, they're coming up with a secret radiation plan.
Whoa! Don't do anything worth spying on? That's like saying it's okay for the NSA to access our emails and our phone records, because if you're not doing nothing wrong, you don't nothing to hide. It's like, well, no. That's the worst thing you've ever said. Like, morally, ethically, the worst thing you've ever
you're
said.
You're just saying that because you don't want them spying in on your sausage party.
I know. You know what? I want the NSA watching me all the time. I have an ego. Quite frankly, I enjoy the attention of knowing that the American government is monitoring me on a T4SEVS basis.
Well, then what are you bitching about?
You! Clearly!
I get it now.
Do you? Do you really get it?
I don't feel like he's learning anything, Tony. I feel like it's in one ear and out the anus.
That's the general flow of things.
Giggity.
Is it?
Is it not?
I really hope you're not eating by putting food in your ear canal.
No.
He only eats string cheese, and now we know why.
I just blenderize things and get a funnel.
That just made me feel, like, so uncomfortable.
Where the hell are we?
We're so close to the end. That's where we are.
So they're like, we're going to get the rods.
Giggity.
Out of the Z-bomb. The whatever they are. The carbon rods? What are they called?
It's an inanimate carbon rod.
And they're going to take them and then, like, stick them up into the Cyberman's grill.
That sentence did not end with the word I thought it would end with.
He's just continue on and not acknowledge that happened.
Because they're in, like, hazmat suits, so they can take the rods and then, like, hey, Cybermen, and then they fall over and fall apart.
How very descriptive.
Thank you.
Have you considered having your own podcast?
I've considered it.
We decided it wouldn't be any good.
Yeah. We just invite our friends to talk to us and then say we're recording a podcast.
But really, it's just a way to get people to hang out with us.
That sounds about right.
And then we laugh at their dumb jokes so that they stay.
Sausage party. Right, guys?
Yay! Aww,
it's working.
So good.
So are we at the point where the Zeus 5 is back on the screen? Does it change from the Zeus 4 to the Zeus 5 partway through the story, or are they different ships?
They're different ships.
Zeus 4 explodes. Zeus 5 has Cutler's son. Cutler's last stand. That's another name for this episode.
Sorry, can I just point out this one sentence on the TARDIS wiki says, the Cybermen that were approaching the humans disintegrate as the power source that they had been drawn from has been retarded. That is what it says on the wiki.
What does that sentence mean?
And also, why use that word?
I mean, it's a word.
Was it used in the show?
I don't think so.
Anyway, so the Cybermen... One of the Cybermen is deactivated, and they use the gun and the radioactive equipment to deactivate the Cybermen. Haynes gets killed. It turns out that the Zeus 5 is okay. It shows up like, hey guys, sorry, we just popped to the 7-Eleven for ice cream. Does anyone else want anything?
I feel like they're like, we were just on the other side of the planet, but I'm good.
Because Mondas explodes, right?
Yeah.
And all the Cybermen fall dead. So, like, we lost...
Sorry, yeah. did we just hand-wave Mondas explode? Oh, but the Mondas explode? Yeah, I think it explodes. Anyway, 7-Eleven.
No, it explodes, and then all the Cybermen just die because it explodes.
It's like a real Avengers ending.
They're like, well, they were relying on the life force of the planet.
Which they've been sucking from Earth, so why can't they just tap into... They're on Earth, so... I don't know. Can they not just tap into it there?
Don't think about the narrative of this story too much.
My thing is, so they escape, like, they're all in the Xylo, and they escape and kill the Cybermen, and then one of the Cybermen kills one of the scientists. But if they just held out in that room...
And done nothing!
That scientist wouldn't be dead, and the Cybermen would still be dead.
Yeah, Indiana Jones.
So, like, Ben basically killed a guy, is what I feel like you're getting at.
Yeah, Ben killed a dude. Ben Patton... Killed.
Hey, I haven't killed anyone since I left the UK.
I'm just putting that out there that this is like a real, like, the Daleks situation.
Well, we're now moving away from the bit where there are Cybermen and towards the interesting bit where the Doctor is kind of not quite with it. So they're taking him back to the TARDIS. Ben gives him his cloak so that he doesn't freeze to death.
Ben's like, it's all over. And then the Doctor's like, It's far from all over. Yeah, that line's good, and it like gets all up in the camera. That bit exists a little bit. So,
which, and here's my question: when this episode was first released, was it like, "Hey, we're gonna be replacing the Doctor"? Like, heads up.
I don't know. I'm very interested to know what the press coverage would have been at the time. I think there was some newspaper coverage, but it wasn't like a TV thing.
And I wonder if, like, okay, because spoilers, he regenerates. The guy, Patrick Troughton, looks kind of similar. To me,
if
to the time meddler.
The face recognition that I have. Then I was like, did his face change? Is it two yet? I can't honestly tell.
But to me, he looks an awful lot like the time meddler. I wonder if there's anyone who's like, oh shit, he just turned into the time meddler.
I think that no one on the planet was thinking that, and I think you're a crazy person. But yeah, the Doctor fiddles with some dials. Some of the dials fiddle with themselves. The TARDIS console masturbates, basically, is what happens. And then the Doctor, he's fiddling with some dials. He looks over, he sees Matt Smith. They share a moment. Then he falls down. They roll him over. You haven't seen Adventures in Time and Space yet, so the reference is lost on you. They roll him over, and then we get that amazing shot that we were talking about earlier, where the Doctor's face is there, and he's slightly sweaty, and then everything suddenly it's overexposed. And during the overexposure, that's when they blend in Patrick Troughton's face, and it's amazing. And they do a pretty serviceable job of recreating it in the animated reconstruction as well. I don't want to underplay that, because they did a pretty decent job doing an animated equivalent of that scene, and it's very clear that they traced or rotoscoped parts of the surviving footage to make that.
And they did the same thing with it's far from all over line as well.
That moment where the Doctor is regenerating is... Vision, just the original, not the in the reconstruction. The original is just absolutely stunning to look at.
And it's so much better than what they were planning on doing before someone was like, hey, this thing's broke, let's use it. Which was just, he's going to put his coat up over his face, and then the next episode they pull the coat away and he would be Patrick Troughton.
Yeah, that's dumb. But that's the cliffhanger at the end of this episode, is the Doctor's face change. What's going on?
I just couldn't imagine, like, watching this when it aired.
I want to read something that's on the Wikipedia page. The Doctor originally had some last words. He was scripted to say, no, I simply will not give in. And then the director is like, nah, I'm not going to film that.
No, that would be stupid. That would be stupid if we spent, like, a whole episode of the Doctor being like, but I want to go. I want to stay.
But as a result, his last words are now, ah, yes, thank you. That's good. Keep warm.
Which is not as bad as the Sixth Doctor's last words, which are, and I'm quoting here directly, carrot juice, carrot juice, carrot juice.
I don't know if that's a bin fact or real.
No, that's real.
What?
That's a true fact.
That is a true fact because they were scripted. They weren't intended to be his last words at the time because obviously Colin Baker didn't come back for his regeneration. So his last words were carrot juice, carrot juice, carrot juice.
That's brilliant, though. I kind of wished like his last line was the "It's far from all over."
It's far from all over. That's a solid like last line.
Yeah, but then he had to be like, oh, right, I gotta put a coat on.
Yeah, if they'd just been like, I don't need this fucking coat. I wish his last words had been, did I leave the door unlocked? No, what it should have been is he should have looked up at Ben and Polly and gone, oh, and then started regenerating. Like he was about to tell them something of great importance.
That would be awesome.
I think his last words should have been, is this your card? And then he checked.
By the way, my real name is...
I guess it's time.
It's time.
It's time for
final thoughts.
Ben, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are that it is far from over. And I think that sentiment is I think perfect for Doctor Who at this era. Like changing the lead actor in your show is such a dangerous move. And not only did Doctor Who pull it off, they pulled it off incredibly successfully. Visually, it looks amazing, and you'll get to see Patrick Troughton as the Doctor over the next serials kind of find his footing with the character and create a very different Doctor. Like, every Doctor that we've had since, especially the modern Doctors, owe everything that they have to Patrick Troughton, his decision to play the Doctor very, very differently. But none of that would have happened if they hadn't decided to have this moment. Like, this moment is absolutely key to Doctor Who's longevity and its long-lasting, enduring appeal as a science fiction series. And The Tenth Planet as a story, it's not great. The Doctor doesn't do a lot in it except for go, you know, is this your card? He does the Karnak bit. And then he sleeps for a third of it. And then he dies. Which, again, it's a Raiders of the Lost Ark scenario. Like, they stay, as early as episode one, they don't have to do anything. Mondas will tire itself out and will go to sleep. Like a petulant baby who's having a temper tantrum in the middle of a supermarket. If you just let it go, let him do his thing, he'll tire himself out, and then he can have a nap on the way home. But that's, they meddle too much. And I think that there's something actually very interesting in the characterization of that meddling in Ben killing a Cyberman, in Cutler trying to avenge the death of his actually not dead son. Like, there's a lot of very interesting, intricate elements all turning in motion at the same time. I think there's a very nice poetry in all of these elements happening when they don't really need to be. Like, I think that's a very human thing. I think people like to try to fix things that don't need to be fixed, be it problems with our home life or with ourselves or with other people. Like, how many times have you been in a relationship with someone where you felt the need to try to fix something about them, or they felt the need to try to fix something about you, when trying to fix something, quote unquote, about the person you're in a relationship with just makes the relationship worse. You know, I think that there's, I'm rambling. None of this is usable, and
no,
it will get
good.
Cut. You'll just have me going, great! And then they'll just cut to one of you guys talking. But there's a lot of the thematic elements in this story, especially the Cybermen who are artificially, you know, prolonging their own lives through machinery and through computer technology, when that's something kind of that the Doctor does at the end of the episode, because it's the regeneration process, which is not named regeneration until the third Doctor does it some years later. But the entire process of regeneration is attributed in the next episode as a function of the TARDIS. So there's a nice kind of symmetry in the Cybermen trying to desperately prolong their own lives through technology, and the Doctor scrambling to get to the TARDIS to prolong his own life by instigating this change, this regeneration. And I think there's a lot of all these disparate elements in the story that fit together very, very well, like a toy in a Kinder Egg. But like a toy in a Kinder Egg, doesn't always work. Some of the bits are falling off, and you'll forget where you put it in a couple of days.
We don't know anything about that.
You idiots. You guys know what a Kinder Egg is, though, right?
Yeah. We had them for like a while, and then I think someone
choked on them
and got sued.
There's something very delightful about America, in that it's a country where everyone refuses to do gun control, but Kinder Eggs are banned because they, you know, if there's a toy in the candy, someone will choke on it and die.
So, Tony.
Yes.
What are your final thoughts?
Actually, I liked a lot of what Ben said. I do think, like, if you kind of sit down and look at the story, there's a lot of, okay, but why? Why do any of these things work the way they do? But watching it, it's really solid. Like, it works on an emotional level. It works. It's entertaining, which I've said a lot on this podcast where I'm like, sure, this is like, there's probably an episode that has like a more solid story, but I was entertained the whole time I watched this episode. There was never a point where I was bored. But yeah, like there's a lot going on here thematically. And I think it was, for something that had kind of a weak story, it was a stronger serial than I feel like we've had in like the past couple episodes. And it was cool. It's the first Cybermen. It's, you know, the first regeneration. That's a really important episode. I still get kind of bummed that, like, we're moving on to two, and the companions that we have are Ben and Polly, which are probably, like, my least favorite TARDIS teams since, like, in the One era. I think it's fair to say it's my least favorite TARDIS team. And end of sentence. And so I'm kind of, like, I'm excited to get on to two, and I'm really sad that one's gone. Like, it's weird that we're already at this point where we're at a new Doctor.
We're about to get just a completely new... It's going to be like none of the cast members from the very beginning of the show
will be there anymore. I'm kind of ready for that. I'm ready to have it be something completely new. And, you know, I don't care for Ben and Polly. I don't care for Ben.
Thanks. Thanks for that.
Don't care for him.
Thanks, Duchess.
But, like, and there's a moment, you know, where he's going back to the TARDIS, and I was kind of thinking, this moment would feel like would land better if like Vicky was here, or if Susan was here, or if Ian and Barbara were here, or Steven was there. Any of those people. Anyone but Ben.
That's fine. That's good. No, it's healthy that you're getting all this out while I'm here.
Because, you know, they've not been with the Doctor very long, and so it is kind of sad that they're the ones who are there when he goes. But yeah, it's a solid serial. I liked it a lot, and I don't have anything as good as what Ben said. It was good. I liked it.
Kinder Egg.
Can you compare this story to an American candy?
Come back to me.
No. Answer it immediately.
Yeah, I'm going to think of a candy.
Oh my God. You guys said so much, like I have nothing to do but repeat. It was good.
You know what
it's something, like? Something Kinder Egg.
Giant chewy sour, like those giant chewy sweet tarts.
Mm.
They're really, really good, but you still have like the one grape one. And you're like, that's fine. I'll buy it and I'll eat the one grape one, even though it's not great. Because the lemon and the...
You know what this cereal is really like? It's like a Kit Kat. Hear me out. Kit Kat's kind of... You've got the two elements. You've got your wafer and your chocolate. And that kind of works. That's fine. It's not particularly complicated. It's simple. It's nice. You know what you're getting. And it's enjoyable. It's maybe not as, you know, full-flavored as boisterous as some other candies. But it is what it is. But what this... In particular, because this is missing an episode, this is like one of those Kit Kats you get... Where you bite into it and there's no wafer, it's just solid chocolate. So it's missing something. And then you email Nestle to complain that you know, your Kit Kat didn't have any chocolate, didn't have any wafer in it. And they send you a check for £6 in the mail. And you're like, well, actually, I wasn't really complaining. I was, you know, I like the chocolate. I want more Kit Kats with no wafer. And I do it as a limited edition thing. And like, we're sorry, here's £6. And you don't really understand what's happening, but you've been mailed a check by Nestle, one of the largest corporations in the world, for about 12 times what this candy bar cost you. What I'm saying is, I once bit into a Kit Kat and it didn't have any wafer in, and I wrote to Nestle to complain. This was obviously before I moved from the UK, and they mailed me a check for £6, which is about $10. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
This has been another episode of the British Candy Authority, starring Ben Patton.
You joke, but it has.
I should really say my real thoughts. I do. It's a really good serial. Yeah, it's like you said, it's an important one. The introduction of the Cybermen, which they were interesting. Nice design, even though they are kind of silly looking. They're also kind of creepy just because it is sort of featureless faces, but like still very recognizably like a face. After the first episode of the Cybermen, they don't really do anything for like the next few episodes. They just show up and get killed like immediately. I kind of would have liked more of the Cybermen throughout the episodes instead of they're just there to begin with and then nothing. I really liked the plot with General Cutler and his son. I thought that was a good, solid, emotional through line. Yay for like a non-terrible person of color.
Sorry, can I just point out, when you put it like that, it makes it sound like you are glad that the person of color in this script is not terrible because you, Joseph Heath, are a racist. That's what I hear every time I hear you say that. And I know that what you're expressing is it's a character played by a person of color who is three-dimensional and isn't just, you know, a non-speaking extra. But it sounds very much like you're going, oh, thank God there's a non-terrible black man in this thing because black people are the worst. Someone's going to edit that and take it out of context. Don't include me saying this. Don't include me saying this. Do not include me saying this.
That's going to go up on Twitter as one of your quotes.
Don't, please don't do that.
Just know that we have that audio forever now.
Shit.
Just think about it when you make your life decisions.
Yeah, but no, that, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they're not putting in a terrible stereotype like they've done in the past, or, you know, worse, someone in blackface, which they've done as well.
Yeah. Actually, did you know that Patrick Troughton wanted to play the role of the Doctor in a turban and in brownface? And they were like, maybe not do that.
I hope you're joking.
No, this is a real thing. This is a fact. You're welcome to look it up in your research for the next serial.
No.
I am very glad that did not happen.
Can you imagine being like the whole, like, there's like a whole doctor that we just pretend didn't happen. Because it was the worst.
They just edit somebody in over him talking loudly for entire length of a doctor.
Giggity. Sorry, Length of the Doctor. Actually, you know what? Length of the Doctor was a really good anniversary special. I was really, really happy with it.
And also, it's the name of a club in the Ninth Doctor's era. I read somewhere that the Mondas energy thing, the sucking the energy, is also sort of what drained the Doctor of his life force.
That's, well, there are a number of theories about that. Some of it is that the energy was also drained from the Doctor. Some of it, there's an idea that the Doctor's, the story before this one was it a Dalek story?
No, it was the Smugglers.
No, oh no, you know what? There's a novel set before this that I think is a Dalek encounter, where the end of the novel sets up that the Doctor was weakened by his encounter with the Daleks.
But yeah, I did feel like I might have preferred a little more explanation about why the Doctor's... I mean, you can just go, he's old.
You can just go, he's old. And that's more or less what they did. The end.
I would have liked more Doctor in the third episode. I understand why he wasn't, because I believe he had bronchitis. But yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. There, you, if you look into it, you're like, I don't know why there's a planet that goes away and comes back, and why they're sucking the energy. What is the energy? I don't entirely understand.
Why don't they realize that their plan will blow up their planet?
Yeah, why are they doing these things if it's not really going to do anything? But you never think about that while watching the episode. I feel like you just sort of go along with the flow. The pace was really good. They built tension really well, which sometimes these early serials sort of are slow and boring, but this was very fast-paced and kept you entertained.
It's a lot of fun. And this setting has been revisited a couple of times. Most recently, there was a comic in Doctor Who magazine that I forget the title of. I might have to look it up. But the idea of the story was, it was the 12th Doctor and Clara arrive on the base shortly after the events of this story. Obviously, because of the events of the name of the Doctor, there's an echo of Clara on the base. And so when they get there shortly after the events of the 10th Planet, and the Clara echo is there, and when she learns about what she is, kind of goes a little bit crazy. It's actually, I'm not going to give you too much, because it's actually a really cool comic. I thought it was a really cool concept, and it's in Doctor Who magazine. I think it's been collected in a collection by Panini. I forget. I cannot remember the name of this story. It was really, really interesting. It was kind of cool to revisit the setting of 10th Planet as well.
Let's do one more feature. This is for you, Ben. How would you do this serial if it was modern Who?
If it was modern Who, I would make it a one-parter. I'd make it a 45-minute story as opposed to like a two-parter. The Cybermen would obviously look a little bit more... Actually, you know what? I really like the current modern incarnation of the Cybermen. I'm not a big fan of the Russell T. Davies era kind of chunky, clunky Mega Man boots design of the Cybermen, but the current kind of more sleek variation, the Nightmare in Silver model, I really, really like. So that's what the Cybermen would probably look like, but I would still have them talking more vocally. I wouldn't have them as expositionary, but I kind of up the threat, because again, they don't need to do anything. So you need to have an actual threat for the, you know, for the Doctor to tackle. And also, because if you go into it knowing that this is this Doctor's regeneration story, because that now is event television, so the story has to be kind of, it has to be event television, it has to be a big spectacle. Whether or not you liked Time of the Doctor is that's down to personal preference, but it is still an event story. It's a big thing that happens, and every Doctor's regeneration really since, I want to say, the Fourth Doctor's onwards has been a big story. We've known that the regeneration was coming up, and the story's kind of, like, in particular, Caves of Androzani does a wonderful job of playing with the audience expectation of, oh, the Doctor's going to die in this story. That's something that I would play with more. And I guess maybe I would, you know, maybe just throw in more anthropomorphic sausages and hot dog buns with vaginas and breasts.
I'm so hoping you would.
I can hear Tony seething. I can hear her.
I can seethe. See it.
Joe, you may want to leave the room. She's going to blow.
And so is that hot dog bun, know what I'm saying? With her vagina mouth.
I hate both of you.
I mean, you actually don't hate at least one of us, and there's paperwork to prove it.
That was Ben Padden's The Tenth Planet. Would you still include The Tenth Planet?
I probably wouldn't call it The Tenth Planet. I wouldn't call it The Ninth Planet, because you don't want a bunch of neckbeard mouth breathers complaining on the internet that Pluto's a planet. Bleh. I'd give it a different title. Coming of the Cybermen, although that sounds vaguely sexual.
I like The Coming of Mondas. That sounds
suitably jizztastic.
The Return of Mondas, yeah.
That takes all the coming out of it.
The Ejaculation of Mondas. Cyber jizz.
That was Cyberwoman, wasn't it?
Basically.
That's been another episode of the Watchathon of Razzalon. We did another one.
We did it.
Anything you want to plug before we go?
Usual, find me online at benpadden.net. Various projects there. Port Center, Jump Leads, Adventures of...
Dalek Gary, right?
PB Winterbottom. Dalek Gary. You know, more people should watch Dalek Gary. A lot of love and care went into making Dalek Gary. I think it's one of the funniest things I've ever written. And it never took off in the way that we were kind of hoping it would, like some of our previous projects, like Boomer's Day Off and the Jump Leads webcomic, which was insanely popular at a point. But it has a very small but dedicated fan base. I saw people at San Diego Comic-Con last year who watched it with their son. They had a kid, and they sat and watched it together as a group. And once the boy realized that I was the co-writer and the voice of Gary and Dalek Gary, he got all shy and adored. And it was just nice. And I'm really proud. I was thinking about this the other day. I'm so proud of Dalek Gary and everything, all of the work, because it took us like 5 years to make that thing. It didn't take off in a huge way. We probably won't make any more. I'd like to make more. But, you know, I'm happy with it. Just find it online. It's on YouTube. YouTube.com/Kill9TV. Sorry. And that's the number 9, Kill9TV. And just watch it, you know, because a lot of care and love went into making that thing. And for its flaws, I'm very proud of what we did.
So, yeah, definitely watch Dalek Gary.
And look us up.
Oh, right. You should maybe follow us. You can check out our website at watchyourassalon.com. We're on Twitter at watchyourass. If you like our show and want to help us out, you can go to watchyourassalon.com/support. There is a link to our Patreon there, which is patreon.com/watchathon. And also there is an Amazon wish list if you want to like purchase us one of the DVDs, and you will sponsor that episode, and we'll shout you out on the episode, and you will be basically like a producer for that episode.
Because you helped make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll put your name up on our website as well. We will be back next time. We're going to take a break from Classic Who, and we're going to do a special on, we're going to watch An Adventure in Time and Space, and then cry a lot because we miss one. And then we'll be back with the first episode of The Second Doctor, which is The Power of the Daleks, and we'll have Vincent E.L. will be on that episode.
Who do you have as your guest for the Adventure in Space and Time episode?
No one, it's just us.
Okay, I'm not important, that's fine.
I think you should record, like, separately, just record your thoughts, and we'll just edit it in.
Here's what I'll do. I'll send you a WAV file of me just going, oh, that's a good point. I don't agree with you. Oh, yeah. No. Oh, good one, Tony. Good one, Joe. Ha 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 ha. Just, like, various things you can just sprinkle in there. And occasionally I'll say things like, I'm also here. And you can just drop it in the edit.
And then just say, like a hot dog bun with a vagina mouth and titties.
No, I'm going to move on to a different movie next week. No, next week is Finding Dory.
Well, let's hear an example.
That is one sexy fucking fish.
And we're done. Can't go out on a better note than that.
Bye.
I'm not having a sex party. I'm not having a sex party. I am not having a sex party.
It's far from being all over.